Monitor now invites you to Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air, winner of every major award in its field. Today's guest on Meet the Press will be Robert F. Kennedy, Democratic senatorial candidate from New York State. We'll bring you today's program in a moment. This is Frank Blair, happy to be a part of the Sunday night Monitor scene. One of the reasons is that we get to talk with interesting people, and one of these was pollster Elmo Roper. Here's a part of that interview.
There was an article in the October issue of McCall's which outlined some of the problems connected with taking political polls. And one of them was the problem of making an accurate prediction, and that many polls made erroneous predictions in the Republican presidential primaries held earlier this year. What I want to know, Mr. Roper, is why are these mistakes made?
There are a number of ways in which a poll can go wrong, but first off, I'd like to say that none of the better pollsters are now calling anything they say a prediction at all. Mm-hmm. We're not any longer saying that what is true on the first day of October is necessarily going to be true on the third day of November.
You meet all kinds of people on Sunday Night Monitor, on NBC Radio.
Through your United Fund or Community Chest, your money goes far to help people. Here's how, says the Chad Mitchell Trio.
Just give one skill right, take great delight in knowing that United Dollars have great might. Remember, one gift works many wonders, so let human kindness have its day. Start by pledging the best way for giving. Give the United Way.
Now, Meet the Press. Today's guest, Robert F. Kennedy. Our panel consists of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Nat Finney of the Buffalo, New York Evening News, James Clarity of the New York Herald Tribune, and Edwin Newman of NBC News. Ned Brooks is our moderator.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is former Attorney General Robert F. Kennedy, the Democratic and Liberal Party candidate for the United States Senate from New York. Mr. Kennedy is opposing the present Republican governor, or senator rather, Kenneth Keating, in a race which has attracted wide national and international attention. We'll have the first question now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Kennedy, James Reston of the New York Times wrote that one of your problems in New York is to live down the charge that, and these were his words, quote, you are a ruthless and ambitious young man who gets what he wants, no matter who is hurt in the process. What's your answer to those charges, which have, as you probably know, been fairly widespread?
Well, I don't think that I'm ruthless, Mr. Spivak. I suppose other people are going to really have to make that final judgment determination, and perhaps can make it better than I can myself. I've had a public career now of some 12 or 13 years. I'd have to stand on that record, what I've done, what I've stood for, what I've tried to accomplish. And if, and I think that it's open for everyone to see and everyone to study. And people are just going to have to make their judgment on whether they think that's the kind of a person I am or not.
Have you any explanation at all for this image of you that has been sent out to the people by so many papers in this city and papers like The Nation and The New Republic?
Well, I think that over the course of my career, I've been involved in some struggles. And perhaps it rises out of that. I suppose, really, in the last analysis, I'm not the best one to ask that question of. I think that those who think I'm ruthless, maybe they'd be able to document why they think I am.
Mr. Kennedy, the New York Herald Tribune yesterday quoted you as saying something to a young man which I think has come in for a good deal of criticism. It says that he was criticizing federal spending, and in the exchange, you turned on him and said, and this is the quote, I just pack up my bag and leave if you don't like the country. Did you say that, and were you kidding, or were you serious?
No. What he said, he went into the national debt, and he said that the federal government owed him $10,000, and that when was the federal government going to pay him back the $10,000 that they owed him? And I explained that there was great things that were being done for the federal government by the federal government, and by others for him. There were people that were fighting in Vietnam. There were people that were fighting and standing on the wall at Berlin. There were those who had been ready to invade Cuba if that had been necessary. that the roads and highways that made it possible for him to obtain an education had been obtained by others making sacrifices as well. And that and he came back and said, well, I don't like it, I want my $10,000. So I suggested that if he didn't like living in here, with all that he acquired from living in this country and our system of government, that I'd move to some other country.
Mr. Kennedy,
I might say that all the rest part of this exchange was all left out of the story.
Mr. Kennedy, another damaging charge made against you by Senator Javits and other critics is that you're coming into New York not to serve the state, but to use it as a political springboard. Now, if you wanted to serve New York, why did you first refuse to run, and why did it take you so long to decide to become a candidate?
Well, first, it was mentioned in the spring of 1964 that I might run, and I seriously considered it at that time. After my younger brother was injured and had his back broken, I thought that my responsibilities to other members of the family might be great. My responsibilities to him and to his family might increase. And I thought rather than to delay, as I hadn't made up my mind that I wanted to run, I thought so that the Democratic Party could select some other candidate and not wait to find out whether I was or was not going to run, that I'd put out a statement and say so that they could make up their minds and center on somebody else. So I said that I would not run, and I had made up my mind then I would not run. Circumstances changed then several months afterwards. The Democratic Party still had not selected a candidate, and that after, just prior to their convention, after President Johnson's announcement about the vice presidency, they came to me and asked me to run at that time. I've had these long ties with the state of New York. I lived here for 20 years. I've been involved in matters that intimately affect the state of New York, whether it be the question of survival or whether it be the domestic matters, which I think are so important. And I want to serve the people of the state of New York. I want to serve in the government. I want to continue making the same kind of effort that we started in 1961. So
Mr.
I decided
Kennedy,
to run for the Senate.
Your critics also say that your desire to work for New York State developed only after you had had the vice presidential nomination foreclosed to you. Would you rather have run for the vice presidency?
Well, I'm running now for the United States Senate. I was the other never opened up to me. We never got into a discussion about whether I could or should run for the vice presidency of the United States. I want to run for the United States Senate. I'm pleased that I'm in this race for the United States Senate. I want to serve the state of New York. I want to serve the people of the state of New York. And if I'm elected to the United States Senate, that's what I shall do.
One other question. Couldn't you have served the country better if you'd remained as Attorney General than as a freshman senator from New York?
I think I began the things that I felt strongly about as Attorney General, whether it was in the field of civil rights or whether it was in the fight against organized crime. I think those programs now are a continuation. Prior to November 22nd, I had discussed it with my brother, and I had told him at that time I did not want to serve after the end of the year. So this was not something new. And I think I can serve in the United States Senate and do the things that I think mean so much to this state and to this country.
We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Finney.
Mr. Kennedy, the Walter Jenkins case has raised some curiously serious security questions in Washington. Here we have a man with a police record, and I understand that you have publicly stated you did not know of this, but the man was in charge of security procedures in the White House. Now, what conceivably can be done to tighten up this procedure so that that sort of thing won't repeat itself?
Well, I think there are a number of unanswered questions, Mr. Finney, at the present time. I think the investigation that's being conducted, which is going to be made public, will answer those questions.
It's your feeling, I take it, that the investigation will produce something on which some remedies can be put forward.
I think that's absolutely necessary.
Mr. Clarity.
Mr. Kennedy, Senator Keating has made a number of rather harsh charges against you. I'll begin with one that Senator has said many times in so many words, that your ultimate political objective is the White House, the presidency, and nothing else. Is that true?
No, it is not.
What is your ultimate political objective, if you have one?
Well, I was involved in matters over the period, particularly over the period of the last 3.5 years, in which I feel very strongly about. I think the first and most important is the question of survival, the question of whether we're going to be able to survive in this world and what the position of the United States is going to be, whether we're going to have a position of leadership, whether we're going to take the direction or whether the rest of the world is going to look elsewhere. I think, secondly, what improvements we can make in the lives of our own citizens, whether we can turn this world and this country over to the next generation in a better way than we received it from the last generation. I think that's the effort that we made over the period of the last 3.5 years. I'd like to be involved in that, continue to be involved in that. I think I can be in the United States Senate. I think that where New York succeeds, the rest of the nation is inspired, and where New York fails, I think the country fails. And I think that the problems that we're going to have, and this country's going to face, are going to be centered in the United States Senate. I'd like to be involved in that. I want to be a senator from the state of New York. I want to serve the state of New York. I want to serve the people of the state of New York. That's my ambition.
Would you like to run for president someday in addition to your other ambitions?
My only ambition at the present time is to run as senator of the state of New York and be a good United States senator.
Another charge that Senator Keating has leveled at you is that you're the candidate of the old political bosses in New York City. He specifies Representative Adam Clayton Powell and Congressman Buckley, who have been opposed, both of them been opposed by Mayor Wagner and the reform movement. You did come in with their sponsorship.
I came in also the man that gave the nominating speech for me at the convention was Mayor Wagner. Nobody's been more active in my campaign than Mayor Wagner. I'm also the candidate of the Liberal Party here in the state of New York with Alex Rose and Dave Dubinsky. There are a number of people who are supporting my candidacy within the Democratic Party and outside the Democratic Party.
Well, do you think then that Mr. Buckley and Mr. Powell are the kind of people that make a good Democratic Party in the city and state? Well,
what I hope is that the Democratic Party will be broadened as much as possible. I'd like to see as many more young people come into the Democratic Party. I'd like to have the same kind of effort that we made at the Department of Justice, where we brought young youth and talent and energy and dedication into that department, as well as into the federal government generally. I'd like to have that also exist in the Democratic Party here in the state of New York.
Mr. Newman.
Mr. Kennedy, would you also like to see the Democratic Party narrowed in the sense that Adam Clayton Powell and Congressman Buckley were not in it?
No, I think it's broad enough for many, many different kinds of people.
Mr. Kennedy,
I think it would be presumptuous of me to say who should be in the Democratic Party and who should not.
Mr. Kennedy, you were at one time connected with a Senate committee when Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin was on it, chairman of it, and that conceivably will cost you some votes in November. What precisely was your connection with that committee, and how did it come about?
Well, the first job I had after I graduated from law school was as a special assistant to the Attorney General, and I worked in Brooklyn, New York for about a year. After the election in November of 1952, there were a number of lawyers that were hired out from the Department of Justice, were hired by Mr. Flanagan, who was the general counsel of that committee, had been the general counsel under the Democrats and was kept on as the general counsel of that committee. That was separate and apart from Mr. Roy Cohn, who was also hired by Senator McCarthy and who hired his staff. I worked for Mr. Flanagan. I was not involved in any of the so-called communist investigations during that period of time.
What did you think? Excuse me.
If I may explain. I was involved in matters such as the fact that the government purchased some palm oil and put it in tanks, heated, and then had no way of getting it out of the tanks. Momentous matters such as that.
What did you think?
I saw other investigations taking place of which I had no part, which I did not approve of. I didn't approve of the procedure. And after in working with the committee for approximately 5 months, I went to Senator McCarthy, said I disagreed with the way the committee was being handled. I disagreed with the procedure, and I left the committee. I then went to work for the Hoover Commission. In February of 1954, the Democrats, who were members of the committee, had also left. They came back on the committee. They had enough confidence in me that they hired me as their counsel to represent them on the committee, which I did. I was the Democratic counsel during the Army-McCarthy hearings, and I wrote the draft of the report which criticized both Senator McCarthy and the Army.
In short, you disapproved of Senator McCarthy's conduct, did you?
Yes, in the operation of the committee.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Kennedy, Why did you take that job at all, though? This was 1953, and I think it was a couple of years after Senator McCarthy had been condemned, for example, by Senator Margaret Smith in her, you remember her famous address to the Senate, calling on the conscience of the Senate to repudiate the kind of thing that he was doing?
Well, first, Senator McCarthy made a statement as to how the committee was going to be conducted and what it was going to go into. Secondly, as I say, in order to show his good faith, he kept the Democratic Council. The Democrats remained on the committee. It was felt that it would be helpful to have that kind of an investigation, and those kind of investigation could produce matters which I felt strongly about. I thought the legislative branch of the government, as a check on the executive branch of the government, can be very helpful and productive. I went to work with that objective in mind. And as I say, then I thought that the committee went in a direction which I did not approve, and so I left.
But it was only after you were on the committee that you saw the direction of that McCarthy committee. You didn't see its direction in earlier years?
Well, he gave assurances. And secondly, I had the added fact that the general counsel of the committee was a Democrat who was the counsel under the Democrats, under Senator Huey, prior to the time that I came there. And I worked for him for the complete time that I was on the committee.
Mr. Kennedy, I asked Senator Keating a similar question when he was on this program several weeks ago, and I'd like to give you a chance to answer in your way. You've been in public life since 1953, I believe. What major contribution would you say you've made that you believe entitles you to be senator from New York?
Well, I think it's... I wish I'd known you'd asked Senator Keating. I think it's... tell you the matters in which I feel the strongest about. I think the missile crisis in October of 1962, my position in that, and the strong feeling I had at that time as to what the United States position should be, what we should do. I think also the experiences I had in Berlin crisis of 61, the Berlin crisis of 62, and the matters involving Southeast Asia. I think the efforts that I've made, been involved in around the world, matters involving young people and the young people looking to the United States rather than the Soviet Union. I think domestically, the efforts that we made in the field of civil rights, the cases that we brought to ensure voting rights, equal rights for all of our citizens, particularly in the South. I think the passage of the Civil Rights Bill. I think also I'm pleased and that we were able to obtain the passage of legislation to help the indigent and the poor obtain counsel where they had not prior to the passage of this law in 1964, which was finally signed by President Johnson. I think also the efforts that we made against organized crime, where the convictions increased 800% over 1960. I think the efforts against crime in the United States have to continue, and I think the organizational work that I did as Attorney General with the passage of the legislation, I think, been extremely important.
You said recently, I believe was on the Today Show, and I quote, "I'm running on the record of what we've established over the period of the last 3.5 years in which I was a part." Now, since you claim a part of the administration's record of the past 3.5 years is your record, will you tell us exactly what part you played in establishing that record?
Well, I think I enumerated some of those matters. I was involved not only in the Department of Justice and the passage of the Civil Rights Bill, which was drawn up in the Department of Justice and submitted to the House of Representatives and to the Senate. I was the only witness on that matter, on that legislation before the Senate of the United States. I think the other legislation that I've mentioned, the crime and also the efforts for the indigent, I think the work that we did in civil rights, transportation, and also bringing the voting suits has been important. I think the work that I did in foreign affairs, without again going into it in detail, is something of which I was a part, which I played a role, not only as a member of the National Security Council and a member of the Cabinet, but as a member of the Standing Committee, which had a special responsibility as a chairman for a period of time of the Committee on Guerrilla Warfare, and also as a member of the XCOM Committee, which was a subcommittee of the National Security Council, which had some special and particular responsibilities.
Mr. Finney.
Mr. Kennedy, there are a good many people who feel that this question of running in a state where you are not a legal resident or a qualified voter is not only a legal but a philosophical question. And this question is somewhat hypothetical, but this matter has most often come up in the state courts, where members of the judiciary who have taken an oath not to take any other position while serving as a judge have sought election, usually to the House, and the federal courts have held that their oaths don't in that case count. Now, I'm curious as to whether you would consider it to be ethical on the part of a judge to simply ignore his oath and proceed to run for an elective office, federal elective office, where the inhabitant provision prevails.
I don't think that, I'm not familiar with the particular situation which you're describing, but I don't think that it would be proper for a judge to ignore his oath. I don't know how that relates to my situation.
Well, it doesn't, sir, except in that it raises a direct philosophical question, and the cases have turned on this, and I think there is a general feeling that while technically and under the constitutional provision you have the legal right to run, that there are proprieties that are violated by your doing so.
Well, could I say you dismissed the Constitution of the United States as a technicality? I think that our forefathers laid down specific rules and regulations governing running for the United States Senate. They debated this matter. They debated whether how it should be written in the Constitution as for an individual running for the United States Senate. And they finally made the decision, and it's contained in the Constitution. So I don't violate all the Constitution, nor the spirit of the Constitution. When you consider that the first senator from the state of New York was, in fact, from Massachusetts, I think that's an indication of it. 19 of our senators at the present time were not born in the states that they represent. I think that's the second point. Third point is that I've lived here in the state of New York for 20 years, which is something I think that is forgotten. I've lived in the state of New York for a far longer period of time than I've lived in any other part of the United States. The last 13 years I've worked in Washington, so it was natural that I would be living down there. I lived in the state of New York much longer than, for instance, my brother, John Kennedy, lived in Massachusetts when he ran for Congress, or even after 6 years in Congress and when he ran for the Senate of the United States. So I have this close contact, close relationship with the state of New York, and also I've been intimately involved in the problems that face the people of the state of New York, particularly over the period of the last 3.5 years.
Mr. Clarity.
Mr. Kennedy, everywhere you've been just about during the campaign, you've been met with huge crowds that outnumber Senator Keating's crowds by 20 and 30 to 1. They're enthusiastic crowds. There are lots of children and women and male adults in them. I'd like to know two things. Number one, how much of this popular reaction do you think is for you, and how much of it is a sentimental reaction related to your brother, the late president? And number two, how many votes do you think are in these huge crowds?
Well, the first part, I think a lot of it's related to a strong feeling for President Kennedy, I'm sure. The answer to the second part is, I suppose we'll ultimately know on November 3rd as to how much of that be for votes for me. I've spoken on what I feel is important, what I think the issues are, why I think I could serve the state of New York and the people of the state of New York on education, on housing, on juvenile delinquency, on crime, on immigration, medical assistance for our elderly, how our elderly people are going to be treated generally. I would hope that after hearing that and listening to it, that perhaps more than 50% of the people would think that I could serve them. But I think I just don't know the answer to that.
Mr. Newman.
I think it's a very close race.
To go back to the missile crisis in Cuba in October of 62, when Senator Keating, your opponent now, was highly critical of the administration, what did you think of his conduct at that time?
It wasn't helpful, but I think that's not important what I thought of it.
It is not important?
I don't think it's particularly important, no.
You
I think,
think
the, what I personally thought of it.
In this campaign, what opinion do you have of Senator Keating? Does your opinion of Senator Keating not rest to some extent on what happened at that time?
Yes, it does, very much so.
What is your opinion?
Well, I don't feel that his statements or his position either before the Cuban Missile Crisis or in January, February of 1963 were helpful to the United States and helpful to our objectives.
We have a time for a short question.
When he nominated you, Mayor Wagner said that you had given him and the party certain commitments which resolved his doubts about your candidacy. Can you tell us anything about those commitments?
We wanted to work together to make the Democratic Party as broad-based as possible.
Gentlemen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. In just a moment, we'll tell you how you can get a copy of this week's Meet the Press interview. The Federal Bar Association reminds us that freedom depends on the rule of law. The law protects you. Respect it, uphold it, obey it. And here to help promote respect for the law and for those who enforce it is General Harold Johnson, Chief of Staff of the United States Army.
Service to country is service to law. Our Constitution and laws provide the legal basis for the United States Army. In 1789, Congress created the Department of War, now the Department of the Army, with an appointed civilian as secretary. The first Army legislation in 1789 specified that troops would not only be governed by articles of war, but also would be required to take an oath upon entering service. The oath includes the personal affirmation of allegiance as follows. I do solemnly swear that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the United States of America, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States. Our Judeo-Christian heritage has taught us that freedom rests on the rule of law. In its 189 years of loyal service to the nation, the United States Army has been devoted to duty, honor, and country, and has stood as a guardian of the laws of this land.
You have just heard, pre-recorded, General Harold Johnson, Chief of Staff of the United States Army, speaking in behalf of the Federal Bar Association in support of its law observance program. Now more details on Meet the Press. Today's guest was Robert F. Kennedy, the Democratic senatorial candidate in New York State. And the panel consisted of Lawrence E. Spivak, producer of Meet the Press, Nat Finney of the Buffalo New York Evening News, James Clarity of the New York Herald Tribune, and Edwin Newman of NBC News. For a printed copy of today's Meet the Press interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, M-E-R-K-L-E, Merkle Press, 809 Channing Street, Northeast, Washington, D.C. The National Safety Council says that more than half our traffic accidents, which result in injury or death, involve speeds of less than 40 miles an hour. And an emergency stop, when moving as slowly as 15 miles an hour, is enough to catapult a front seat passenger into the car windshield. Remember, you don't have to be traveling at high speed to need the protection of a seatbelt. At ordinary, everyday speeds, your seatbelt can save you from disabling injury or death. Meet the Press will be heard again next week at this same time. Our guests then will be two Democratic governors, George C. Wallace of Alabama and Philip H. Hoff of Vermont. This is the NBC Radio Network.